on 1116 SEN. We're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and he had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic, but at some time during a game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 455.
Good morning, football fans. It's raining in Melbourne. She's cold outside, which means it's a perfect morning to rug up, sit back, and immerse yourself in matters football by keeping the dial on 1116 SEN Inside Football. The full-on look at footy will go deep. Five big games on Anzac Day. Of course, a very important day for Australia. And football played its part with so many at football, whether it was AFL games or all the local football around the state and around the country, marking with great reverence the 100th anniversary of that landing at Gallipoli, which so marks this nation. The football talk this morning will come from one of the very best, Robert Shaw, player, coach, mentor, you name it, he's done it, and he also observes with a great football eye. 9429 1116, you'll be afforded the opportunity to join in the discussion. And as we sit here this morning, Robert Shaw, as I say good morning to you, it's a different football landscape. It's a football landscape that, as we now look at the ladder, has a glut of teams on 2-2. And all of a sudden, above them, Collingwood on 3-1. Looks down on Hawthorn, looks down on Essendon. It's quite different to what we may have thought when we headed into this very significant weekend of football and commemoration.
Well, it is, Mark, and it also gives Adelaide the opportunity today over here under the roof, which will suit them, the opportunity to go further ahead, a couple of games ahead of those teams that are 2-2. Look, it's developing into a great season. I watched every game apart from the pretty hard to watch two at the one time, which was an interesting scheduling, Mark, to have the two big, big games. I know Essendon Collingwood, big game for historical and also Anzac Day reasons, but certainly Port, Hawthorn, Freo, Sydney on at the same time annoyed me a little bit, but can't do anything about it. So I focused purely on the Port Hawthorn game, and some great things to talk about from Melbourne and Collingwood's ability to take what their opponents really want, which is quick transition, corridor ball movement. So I found the coaching duels led by Ruse and Buckley to be outstanding, and how they did it. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Port Adelaide and Fremantle were unbelievably exciting. Unbelievable to go that far ahead of quality opponents. Great work by the opponents to come back, but you sort of expected that. And I thought, in a way, Hawthorn were fantastic the way they did it. We'll talk about that later. So two very, very exciting teams, Fremantle and Port Adelaide. Unfortunately, we're going to have to talk about the Gold Coast, Mark, because many people had them as a natural inclusion at the very bottom of the eight. They're 0-4 and won't play finals. And to have a look at the comparison yesterday was really good between two of the very young clubs in the competition and what GWS were able to do to them. By what? 66 points. Extraordinary margin.
Carlton, of course, the focus had been on Mick Malthouse equaling the record and next week breaking the record. And really, it probably swung the spotlight away from the team and onto the coach, which was either unfair on the coach or a get out for the side. And they yesterday, of course, travelled over to New Zealand against St Kilda and found themselves five goals down against a young team and on the verge of a disaster, because had we been facing this week, with a Carlton loss, then all hell would have broken loose ahead of Mick breaking the record. And you talk about players playing for a coach, and there's a little bit of that in it, but beyond that, they're also playing for their own pride. And for Carlton to be able to win that game and have such a strong second half, score so comfortably, Lockie Henderson kicked 5 goals, which is important in and of itself, because Lockie Henderson during the week was, well, there were signals certainly from his management that he would wait until later on in the season to recommit to Carlton. So it's excellent for Carlton that they get a win, that Lockie Henderson is a spearhead of that win. Their captain led well, but more importantly, for Carlton's rebuild, which has been stated by their president, if not endorsed by their coach, was the speed of Dylan Buckley. He looked good. Boakhurst, controversial selection. A lot of people were shoving it in Carlton's faces. 21 years of age. Why hadn't he played yet? Probably a good question, why hadn't he played yet? Because even when St Kilda played well in the first half, Boakhurst was a presenter and looked well worth his place in the Carlton lineup. And the most encouraging of the lot is Patrick Cripps, who I actually thought was best on ground. Now, Murphy went close to best on ground. Henderson might have been close to best on ground, but Patrick Cripps was best on ground. He's potentially a beauty. I think in modern football, Shorey, if you can pick up... We've got outsides and insides. Inside mids and outside runners. And the player that can do both, the player that can provide some hardness at the ball, be relevant at a stoppage, be relevant when there's a pack formed, but still can get the ball on the outside and has the pace and the ability to use that ball, that it takes away the need to have specific players who are outside runners who can be exposed and tend to get exposed at certain times of the season. So players that come to mind, Hill of Fremantle, who's a mighty footballer and having a wonderful season. But there will be times when Hill gets locked down and that will not work well for Fremantle. It's been an Achilles heel of his in the past. Probably the one that stands out to me is Andrew Gaff of the West Coast Eagles. Yep. I don't know if you can live solely as an outside player. Isaac Smith might nominally be the best of them, but Isaac, when time goes, but that's goes where he
in the
plays.
Middle. Goes in the middle. Went in when, the middle in the when, second half. When, and the other third string to the bow mark is, as we saw him, comfortable going forward. So if you got that added bonus, Smith goes forward, Gaff, not really sure about going forward, but certainly saw Cripps go forward.
We're going to take an early break, and when we come back, Anzac Day football will always be, I think, Collingwood and Essendon. Other games have been played. Other games will be played. We had 5 yesterday because it fell on a Saturday. But it is Collingwood-Essendon. It is in Melbourne, our grand final in April. And when we return, Pies were absolutely to the point. They were on message for 4 quarters of football. Essendon tried to find that spark that would lift them and maybe allow them to steal a game of football. That's all it would have been. Highway robbery. But so on message were the Pies that it was never going to happen. Now, if you have the same edition of the Herald Sun that I do, do not panic. Despite what it says on the inside of the opening page of the sports section, Collingwood did defeat Essendon. And for Essendon supporters, it might be more vinegar into the wound to see that misprint of the game score going your way. Because I promise you, when we come back, we'll tell you how the Pies did the Bombers.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. Inside Football. Essendon.
See the Bombers fly up.
Collingwood.
Gleeson's confronted, tackle, lost it. Seisman picks up the loose ball. Here go the Magpies. Bacon goal square. Seisman goes for it. All about the bounce. It's rolling. It's there.
Yeah, it was there's some things outside of your control that impact games, and obviously the weather today was going to ask for that heavy contested style, and we understood that going in. Probably been fortunate to have played the first and third rounds sort of in inclement conditions. But yeah, we stuck to the task. There was probably only a period, 10, 15 minute period there through the second where contested ball wasn't on our terms. And although it was still pretty even at the end, you know, we thought that we really stuck it out in that regard.
So there you have it. Always a huge day in Melbourne. It has become now, for Collingwood, a huge day in the 2015 season as they not only mark themselves as a competitor, as a jouster for a spot in the eight, but they also show every team in the competition that when they do stick to the script, these young Magpies, these developing Magpies, actually have the physical presence to compete against a very good team. And that is not only good for now, it's good for the future of the Maggies. Collingwood, 9-15-69. Blanketed the Bombers all afternoon, 6-13-49, in front of 88,395 at the MCG, when the day, this important day in Australian history, the 100-year commemoration of the landing of Gallipoli, was so respectfully observed by that big crowd and so wonderfully marked by the AFL. Congratulations to all of you there yesterday at the MCG. It came across wonderfully on our TV screens as I hand over to Robert Shaw for analysis as to how, in 9-4-2-9-11-16, we canvass for callers, because there was so much to take out of yesterday's game. And Shorey, you will lead the charge.
Thanks very much, Mark. Obviously watched this game very closely. I give great credit to both sides for the competitive nature of the side, but more specifically to Nathan Buckley and his coaching and his team for the way they went out and they were able to stifle Essendon's natural game. We heard James Hurd say we couldn't get our natural game going. We didn't play the conditions well. Well, that's two sides. You knew it was going to be raining, which made it a one kick, one handball, long kick. So Essendon were continually looking for the corridor. And what was just great to see the way Collingwood did it, being prepared to lead their man. No better example than a play to the punt road end where Jack Frost could have quite easily played safe football and stayed with his man. He sprinted 30 metres, left his man. This was a constant of the Collingwood game plan. They pushed off their men. They came up into the face of the Essendon player with the ball. And it's an old cliche, but they denied Essendon space and time. We know that if Essendon have space and time, their transition game is as good as any team in the competition. So when you plan and when you prepare, one of the factors you've got to look at is what can we take away from the team we're playing? What do they want to do? And Essendon wanted to use the corridor. They wanted to transition the game quickly. They had a great outlet player in setting up the play in Dustin Fletcher, who continually found someone. But Collingwood was so disciplined and so strong mentally to come off. Takes a lot of courage, Mark. You're on your man. I'm on Mark Fine. And I leave you to push up 20 metres and deny the Essendon runners. If you look at the Collingwood midfielders, Seedsman, Adams, the impressive crisp. And I'll tell you, Mark, we watch a lot of footy here. There was a very quick glance at the footy record. Number 25. Ah, that's crisp. And I make apologies to the young man because I thought he was outstanding. I've got in front of me some stats, and you and I very, very rarely refer to stats. One of it's got AF, and I'm presuming it's AFL fantasy. Well, I'll tell you what, it is the greatest fantasy of all time that Jack Frost was rated number 20 on the ground with 29 fantasy points. That is fanciful and shouldn't even be a relative comment, because it's based purely on strength. I thought, well done to Paul Seedsman. Well done to him. He's a great story. But I tell you what, if an Anzac medal was awarded for spirit, competitiveness, Jack Frost, I thought, together with his offsider, Nathan Brown, up against Carlisle and Danaher, I thought they were superb and typified the Collingwood effort all day. And I thought, Jack Frost, I think someone gave him one vote out of the three. He got one vote. So well done to them and well done to that young midfield.
And well done to you because Jack Frost is from Wesley and I'm pretty sure Seedsman's from Caulfield Grammar. And being a Brighton man yourself, that would have taken some doing.
Can I give you a very quick
story? Was he from
story?
Caulfield Grammar, Seedsman?
Can I give you a quick story on him? Because it is interesting. He was a skinny wingman for Caulfield Grammar and talented, good eye for a goal. Wasn't on any TAC Cup radar, not on the list. And their coach, who was coaching against, I was coaching the APS combined side in conjunction with the Caulfield, Gary Meredith, and he said, I reckon I've got a kid here, if you can get him in the side, the APS versus the AGVS, he could do all right for you. That was Paul Seedsman. And he kicked three goals in that game. He played very, very well. Had it not been for that game, and then the TAC Cup goes, club, I think it might have been Oakley, go, oh, gee, we better have a look at this kid. So well done to Gary Meredith at Caulfield, who identified this bloke, convinced me to play him. I'd never seen him play. Out he's come. He's 9.5 stone ringing wet, and he dominated the game. And that is a great story about perseverance. And 3 years later, he is an Anzac Day medalist. And he played in that game. You wouldn't have even noticed him, Mark. He played in that game that you come and watched Salem and Kelly play in.
Well, there you go. You've got to say this about what Collingwood has been doing, and that is that the slow burn, or not the slow burn, what's been asked of their fans is for last couple of years to say goodbye to players that were part of a premiership team. Now, it's one thing to do the rebuild. The Doggies and the Saints have said goodbye to some very important players as well. But there is something about a premiership player at a football team. You know that you want to welcome them back. They'll forever be fondly remembered. So to point to the exit with Daisy Thomas, Lumumba,
Heath Shaw,
Dane Beams. Now, some of these players walked themselves. Others were encouraged to leave.
Yeah.
I think everything that has preceded since that 2010 premiership became far more, the plan and where Collingwood could go on the back of this rebuild on the run became apparent yesterday to Collingwood supporters. And there'll still be some ups and downs. This will not be the making of the side of 2015. But because there's so many of them, some are quick to judgment. I'm sure that out of their 65, 70,000 members, there are more patient football supporters than there are for any other team. But because of the numbers, there's also more impatient ones. But surely, every Collingwood supporter, if things do go seesaw a little bit this season, think about Anzac Day and the way this young team stuck to the task. And I'm not saying that Essendon is an old team or a premiership team or the best team, but they are a team that came into the game in good form, and they are a side that really, if you had a look around the ground, body for body, player for player, as they walked onto the ground, they seemed to have the bigger, stronger men, and as they walked off the ground, they seemed to have the weaker, slower men. And that says something about Collingwood.
Yeah. And what you've got to do, Mark, when you're doing that, you've got to have good leadership. And I want to highlight one of their... We'll get on to Essendon in a moment. I want to highlight Cloak, who played against two very good players and was asked at times to sacrifice his game and try and unbalance what has been probably the form defenders of the competition in Hooker and Hurley, with Fletcher in support. That is very hard to break down. And one of the reasons, what you try and do is you get on your bike. They tried to get Hooker up the ground and Hurley deep. If that changed, then Cloak would go for how many goals? I wouldn't even have a clue how many goals Cloak kicked. What did he get, Mark? I think
a couple.
He got a couple, right? He certainly wasn't, what did he get? Nine, he took seven marks, many up the ground. So what he did was play an outstanding team game to try and just constantly unbalance the Hooker-Hurley combination. Now, if you're going to play these young kids, you've got to have your senior players playing roles for the sake of the team. And he's copped a whack, goal kicking and staying too close to goal. But I thought his team performance yesterday was superb, together with other leaders in Pendlebury, who played a great game, and the vice-captain, Goldsack, who now, did a number of roles throughout the game. I'm so glad you mentioned him.
Yeah, Goldsack has become their swing man. You can see him up forward. You can see him down back. You can see
him... He went to Goddard there running at one stage.
That's right. So he is... And obviously, Nathan Buckley is enamoured with the notion of somebody who can play the utility role. Different to Lee Brown, who in the premiership year was a big-bodied back, a difficult forward, and a second rucking option. Here's a footballer who actually can also provide a run-with role through the midfield. Now, Goldsack at the start of the season, I thought for the first couple of games, certainly against Adelaide, looked a little bit at sea in the role, only because Adelaide had jumped Collingwood and he was there trying to plug holes. In the last couple of weeks, he has really stepped up to the mark for a very difficult request. It's not easy to go where the bushfires are, pour a bucket on them, and then be asked to move to another bushfire just when you've been comfortable with the role you've been given. But and I had a look at Glenn McFarlane's best yesterday for Collingwood, and I couldn't disagree with the list. Seedsman, yep. Crisp, Adams, Brown, Frost, Williams, Pendlebury, Elliott and Swan all were worthy names there. And I might just be a little bit ornery and thought, is there anybody missing? And the only one I could add to the mix would have been Goldsack, because, and you'd add Cloak, but it's a comprehensive list and it's pretty spot on for me. And just for the sake of the argument, I thought Goldsack again provided that mobile, that sort of Mr. Fix-It on the run type option that was used very well by Nathan Buckley. Because, of course, the beauty about putting him onto Goddard was that it quelled any notion of, or any long-term notion of putting Goddard deep into the forward line, or it limited probably James Hurd's notions of how effective Goddard would be. You'd almost say that as a permanent back, if Goddard played an extended period in the forward line, Goldsack would be a very difficult opponent for him. So he remained a better option as an on-baller, but Goldsack still showed that he had the mobility to go with that.
I agree. On the other side of the equation, the initial battle, and we saw maybe a young boy emerge, a lot of patience, the Grundy-Bell Chambers battle. Obviously, Essendon losing Ryder to Port Adelaide has thrust Bell Chambers into the first ruck with some support from Joe Danaher. I thought that was one of the better games that I saw Grundy played. The big fella for Essendon was competitive with 24 hitouts. He took six marks and he worked very hard. So that was a great duel. look, at times, Mark, you had Heppel head-to-head with Pendlebury. Meldrum went to Swan initially and tried to run around with him, which meant you had some very, very good battles. But also that meant that the onus, because of the standard of Essendon's midfield, Heppel, good, very good. Stanton started well. Goddard, solid. Watson, solid. Melksham was doing a job. It meant that the likes of Adams and Crisp had to play on the likes of, you know, Watson, a little bit of Heppel sort of thing. So there was enormous responsibility shared amongst the Collingwood midfielders. Essendon's half-back line of Hibbert and Bagley, I thought, were excellent. Hooker took 10 marks. Back in defence as he does. I just thought that Hurley, Hooker, White and Cloak was a really significant battle because all four were very, very good for this team. And it comes back, unfortunately, and it will come back.
So I've got a question to ask.
It'll come back onto Carlisle.
Here we go. Here's the question to ask. So whilst you've got, obviously, Hooker and Hurley.
How did you see White, first of all? I just thought he
continued to work and work, and it meant that...
What's wrong with that?
It meant that if Hurley was in the vicinity, he required an accountable backman to go with him on the leads, and it also certainly invigorated the likes of Elliott to work at his feet.
Well, Elliott and Blair were very significant because Essendon don't have them. They do not have natural, tough little in and under crummers.
So you've got a situation, and we saw on Friday night, Richmond, really, it was almost, it was so stark that Melbourne had, at the fall of the ball, Garlett and Kennedy Harris, and Richmond at the fall of the ball in their forward line had nobody. They don't have that sort of small forward. For Essendon, we're getting to a similar dot. Look, Collier did not have a good game, and Collier's been in pretty good form, but he seemed to be pretty rushed in his kicking, and not the occasion, but certainly the pressure, in the end, I think, told on Travis. But he's had a very good season and should be very pleased with where he is in 2015. Here's the thing. Was Carlisle injured?
No.
Well, if he's not injured...
Oh, hang on. There was some sort of clout. That's probably...
Well, I'm going to ask the question.
No, based on the fact that you're out there and you passed the fitness test.
Does Carlisle believe he's a better footballer or as good a footballer as Jesse White? He must, because the football world does. And when he's up and about...
On pure ability, certainly not on work rate.
Well, that's the whole
not
thing.
Not on body language.
Well, that's what
not on competitiveness. Well, there's spirit.
You see, Joe Danaher might not have had a great day.
No.
He might not have had a great day, but he works his strange moustache off. Now, I don't know if Carlisle's injured. I don't know if Carlisle has the excuse of being injured yesterday, or he just...
No, because
again,
for
once again for Jake, if there's a couple of clunks early and a couple of goals early, and I fear for St Kilda next week, because it might all work out beautifully at Etihad Stadium.
Yeah, he'll kick seven under the roof. Oh, no doubt.
Oh, he can kick eight or nine if he's on song.
What's on song, Mark?
If he's on song, watch out. If he's not on song, watch out. The problem is, the first people to watch out are the opposition. The second group I'm talking about are Essendon. Watch out, because he needs to be engaged in the game of football, and that's not good enough at this level. That is simply not... He can't, you know, tune in, drop out in front of 89,000 people at the MCG in a what could well be an 8-point game now that Collingwood... up and about. I'm not saying it will be, but in an important game of football, because if Essendon have aspirations this year or next year or some year for the top four, and Jake's young enough to be very much a part of those aspirations and a premiership, that means playing in a preliminary final and a grand final. And if you've got two key forwards, one of whom can't work his way back into a game when things ain't rolling along nicely, that's not a good thing, is it?
No, and it remains, because they've had a great win out of Hurley going back. And Hurley is a competitive beast. He is competitive whether he's forward or back. And that three-way combination, Hooker, Fletcher and Hurley, really stands up. So the onus is on with a young bloke like Joe Danaher, who has to shoulder 20% of the ruck and then go forward. Ambrose... Well, he's not the most talented player on the list, but, gee, he pushes up, he works hard, he's got a role to play as that high centre-half forward. And that basically puts Danaher deep and Carlisle in the middle, which is the premier spot, Mark. You want to get it inside your 30. So if you've got Ambrose leading up, you've got Danaher deep, the onus is on Carlisle to get on his bike. I don't know his fitness capacity. I don't know his GPS, he's running, but I can't remember him getting up, and that's why I paid a compliment to the older and more experienced cloak, who just sacrificed himself time and time again to push up to the wing, which just unbalanced. One of the roles of a forward is to try and get the backman to do what he doesn't want to do, and that is work and run and push and come up and back. So regardless of how Jake played or how many marks or goals kicked, he had the responsibility to get Brown and get him running, to get Frost and get him running and moving in and around that full forward position, so that at no stage did they become comfortable. And that was the disappointing thing. Essendon won every known stat known to mankind, but but they couldn't use it the way they wanted to do it, and they were forced to overuse it in the conditions by a very, very disciplined, competitiveness and cohesive Collingwood team, who probably, with the greatest respect, in names, name for name, were the less talented team of the two that ran out onto the ground. But as we know, probably talent sometimes is an irrelevant adjective.
You know that after a game of football in the press conference, especially after a good win, a coach will be very comfortable in how his side has followed the game plans and be upbeat about most players. I'm sure internally, though, there will still be markers and they'll assess whether or not all of the directives were followed and all of those, all of the stated aims during the week are met. Gee, I'd be surprised if Collingwood has a lot to do this week in corrective services. I just can't think of a player that was given a task that didn't do that task. Ramsey's kicking wasn't great, but that didn't mean he was ever lacking in endeavour. The boys just had a really good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm just looking through all the names, mate. And that's the difference. Varco handy. Langdon.
Varco important early. Important. Marley Williams, very good. Yeah, spot on. So you look down that list and you tick them all.
The only one was the young kid, and we can't because he's playing game number 3 against game number 470. Whether the instruction was to young Corey Galt, can you just do your best to try and keep Fletch out of the way? But that was an inexperienced mismatch. But apart from that, even the timing of Dwyer coming onto the ground.
Very important late goal, nice.
Increased run, okay.
All good for the Magpies. Essendon have the bounce back game that they probably want for the 4 points next week against St Kilda.
But whether it proves the issue.
Correct. So they'll have to prove their mettle against better teams than the one we saw yesterday. Than the one we saw play
just
Carlton
a very
yesterday.
Quick one, yep, mate, quickly. Off the SMS. Just a game, Shorey. You know, low standard teams. Teams that will probably make up 6, 7 and 8. I think they'd both be delighted, given the top 4 or 5 in this competition, to finish 6, 7 and 8. But every game is great. You can't always have Port Adelaide versus North Melbourne, can you, Mark? So don't judge the games on... This was an intriguing game. This was a bloody competitive, intriguing game of tactics and organisation. That's what I found enthralling about it.
And for all those Collingwood supporters that have bled for now... It's 36 years almost since Wayne Harms was out of bounds on that half-forward flank and smashed the ball back. That horrible spot now belongs a little bit to you as well, because it might be goal of the year, just as Wayne Harms was assist of the year. Not really, but yes, really. And that'll be good, because Elliott could then get goal of the year and mark of the year, and neither of them would have been mark or goals. But still... The proof is in the scoreboard. After the break, the Blues break their duck. And for the Saints, New Zealand, shaky aisles, shaky football.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. Inside Football. St Kilda. Carlton.
So from the takeaway opportunity for the Blues to ice the game. Cripps, well played, over the top. Henderson runs in and bangs it through for a goal.
I don't want to make it a relief to one, but I think all the hard work we've done, we just need a little bit of luck for our way. And after the first quarter, when we just try to do too much, you put it down to a bit of anxiety and a little bit of perhaps just trying to create something that wasn't necessarily there. And under those circumstances, you give the ball back, then you start to lose a bit of confidence. And once we restored, once we started to hunt the football a bit more and restored the confidence, the game came together for us.
Yesterday... At the Cake Tin, St Kilda were baked by half-time. It was Carlton, 18, 13-121 to St Kilda 12-981 after the Saints led by 4 goals at quarter time, cut to 2 goals by half time, and the writing was on the wall as Carlton started to win stoppage after stoppage. It was 12,125 people that were there at Wellington to see the experiment. And the experiment for St Kilda is not travelling well. They're yet to win a game. For Carlton, the experiment yesterday was a look at life without Judd. Of course, they've seen a bit of that before with Judd's injuries over the last year and a half. But more importantly, the void was filled not by Brock McLean. It wasn't filled by other more senior footballers. It was up to the captain, of course, Mark Murphy. But more importantly and more relevantly, Patrick Cripps, who stood up, I think, and got his first best on ground in an AFL game. An excellent performance by a strong-bodied, mobile, good user of the ball. Doesn't every team want that? Buckley looked sharp before he was, I think, affected by a cork thigh, but he looked like a quick footballer. Boakhurst, plenty of run, plenty of presentation. And for Blues fans, that's exactly what a rebuild starts to smell like. Mick Malthouse admitted after the game it may not have been a perfect performance, but a win is what they needed, and a win is what they got in the hands of the sort of footballers that can take Carlton into next season and beyond and build towards a different looking team, but a good Carlton football team. Tom Bell is a confidence footballer. I think when his kicking's right, Tom Bell's body and his damage comes to the fore. You know, how he's a powerful type of footballer, surely, and he just sometimes, I think, loses a bit of confidence during a game because of how he uses the ball. But yesterday, he grew in confidence. From the St Kilda perspective, again, there were good signs early. The one better sign yesterday for St Kilda was, even though they did get run over in the second half, against Collingwood, there really seemed to be a loss of appetite for the contest. St Kilda yesterday, I don't know whether they... Well, they certainly didn't run the game out in terms of ball usage. Some of their turnovers in the back 50 were horrific. I mean, you just wouldn't... You wouldn't want to see that once, let alone twice, let alone three, four, five times.
There's a reason for that.
Back to the opposition. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, tick all those sort of things. I thought that Carlton, which is Mick's way, I thought he just gave the Saints a window early. He had Curnow on Stevens, Carrazzo went to SEN zone, David Armitage, and the other boy was on the Savage, Armfield, Dennis Armfield. So he went with three run with players, which I thought gave the Saints a bit of initiative because they were trying to close them down. Obviously more experienced, the Carlton people around the ball. That left Murphy on a half-forward flank, a wing, out of the play. Now, Carlton got going when they found themselves 25 points down and then down again at half-time, made the necessary adjustments of Murphy onto the ball.
Yeah, and that's where St Kilda really missed Maverick Weller.
Oh, of course. Yeah, to go straight to them. The Saints used Jack Nunes on Gibbs with good effect. I thought he was very, very good. But I'm going to say something that you think of your young side and you think of how quickly... Now, we've seen the Saints play very, very well early against a number of sides and for numerous reasons, Mark. But I saw a distinct lack of confidence going forward once Carlton got going and once... You know, don't punish Jack Loney, right? Ask the coach, if you are in development mode. Now, we don't know his fitness level, so I suppose I'm leaving the door open for letting Richardson off the hook here. I could not believe in the stage that the Saints are that Paddy McCartan was taken off the ground for a small run with player. To me, that means they're trying to win the game, add run to their team and not develop three or the next potent number one draft pick. Look, he's got 3 kicks and 2 handballs. Please don't take a young bloke off the ground based on stats. Yes, look, he might have hit the wall fitness-wise. He might have been out of petrol tickets. But I tell you what, I must have been watching a different game to what they were, and probably shouldn't have said that, but I think as soon as McCartan went off, the key forwards were Membry, who's not a key forward, he's a third mobility, and Bruce, who's deep and has had a pretty good year. Those kids were looking up, looking for direction, looking for someone at centre-half forward or a key forward. I just think it left them one key forward short, and they began to second-guess themselves with the ball movement. Does that make sense, Mark?
Absolutely makes sense.
It just, mate, look, we can't...
Absolutely makes sense, because it also...
They started to hesitate. They were fluent. They were not second-guessing. They were going inside 50. They had targets in there, and all of a sudden they go, well, they just gave Carlton the chance.
And Carlton have a fleet of halfback flankers, it seemed, that want to run with the ball. Yaron wasn't playing. But there's still Zach Tui. There's Andrew Walker who moves the ball. There's Cade Simpson. They love getting in transition with the ball in the hands of guys that like to run and like to kick. And with the ball being chipped around by the Saints, with St Kilda starting to try to go laterally, I mean, they undid themselves because as they tied, they simply don't have the foot skills. But as they were starting to do this, then... there was no need, really, for the Carlton defence to be flooding back in numbers or to flood back for the long ball into key targets. And I agree that and Patrick McCartan may well have hit a bit of a wall. I mean, yeah, he's a young man who's gone from junior football to senior football and wasn't expected to play AFL football.
I probably should have said McCartan and Richard. I probably should have said they lacked a centre-half forward.
Yeah. Now, the question is... did they need a fleet of smaller players? Did they really, you know, they've got in the team, Saad was a sub.
Yes.
Curran, Sinclair, Wright, then Loney, Geary, Billings. And I thought Billings was better yesterday. There's been a bit of a question mark over Billings, but I thought he looked a bit better yesterday. And then Schneider, Steve and Armitage are on board.
You're saying there's enough.
Well, given that structure, given the youth and the really nature of Patrick McCartan in that he's only played...
two?
Well, he's played a couple of games of...
halves.
Of VFL football, yeah, or a game of VFL football, a practice match here or there. That's all his senior football. Tom Hickey went over for the flight. Now, Billy Longa was good yesterday. Might have been his best game for St Kilda. And could Hickey not have, at least in that structure, provided some sort of cover, some sort of height? Because Membry's not a tall marking forward. But for Carlton, they overcame. They got their first win of the season. And then they head on to Collingwood next week, at least in a frame of mind to celebrate Nick's record-breaking game and try and topple an old foe. They would be looking to do to Collingwood what Collingwood did to Essendon, and if that's the case, well, it might just be one of the happiest days in Nick's life. For break, and when we come back, I'll tell you what's on the menu after 11 o'clock.
On 11:16 SEN, we're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and he had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic. But at some time during a game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 455.
Well, welcome back. The big weekend on 11:16 SEN continues straight from this program, Inside Football, to the Gabba, Brisbane taking on West Coast, and then Western Bulldogs versus Adelaide. Be very interested to see how the Doggies go, having dropped Will Minson. What a big call that is against Sam Jacobs. And of course, without Mitch Wallace and Dale Morris, it's going to be a real stretch for the young Doggies. We'll see how they handle it. But let's head straight to John Ralph of the Herald Sun. And there is a breaking story just surfacing that is of great importance It's not an injury. It's not a max review panel, but it could resonate longer and harder than any injury or max review panel this season. Tell us about it, Johnny Ralph.
Well, hello, Finey. Love your analysis of pure football. Unfortunately, we have to discuss a story that is anything but. Now, the story is that Alistair Clarkson, under extreme provocation from a Port Adelaide fan, punched that fan with a left hook to the chin and the face. Now, the details were that after that loss to Port Adelaide, he walked across the footbridge from Adelaide Oval to the North Terraces where where Hawthorn side were staying. Now, this fan was being filmed by a girlfriend. He got right up in Clarkson's face. How's the wind, Clarko? How's the wind? The provocation could not have been any more extreme. The problem is that Clarko, after pushing him gently to basically say, get out of my space, then hit him with that left hook. Now, it wasn't a type of hook that dropped the person, but given Clarkson's recent past, given the coward punches and all of the issues that we've had about violence, it was absolutely unacceptable. Now, the AFL has been alerted by Hawthorn. Chris Fagan was there on the scene trying to push this fan away. No one in any way condones what this fan did, and probably this fan was looking for that kind of reaction, but he certainly got it from Alistair Clarkson, and unfortunately it'll be a story that will dominate the news until potentially Clarkson stood down, until the AFL Act. There is some significant fallout to come.
I'm sure there'll be some grandstanding. You can guarantee it. Football fans, non-Hawthorn supporters will see this as an opportunity to maybe destabilise the Hawthorn Football Club. But you know what? That fan has met... What that fan has done means that we will now probably have either police escorts or a cordoned off area between Adelaide Oval and the short walk to the accommodations at North Terraces, and that innocence, every time this happens, the loser is the game of football, and the innocence it would have been players or a coach walking with the crowd back to the hotel will be lost forever now, because this will be done under police escort. Alistair Clarkson will have to take his cuts, but we all know what it's like, whether we're in the media or, more relevantly, footballers or football coaches, know what it's like to just have somebody do something wanting the reaction. You know, the girlfriend's filming it, so there's a sense of premeditation here. And whilst I haven't seen the footage, and we all know that you don't punch somebody, and certainly not to the face, this morning, just on what you've told us, John Ralph, I have great empathy for one Alistair Clarkson.
No, you're right. And look, as you say, provocation in regards to this being filmed, in regards to this fan obviously following Alistair Clarkson, and then the fan circulating it to all the relevant media authorities. So, look, no one condones what this person has done, but yeah, we'll be talking covered footbridges, we'll be talking security. Look, let's talk as well about the game. Now, Alistair Clarkson had already lost Brian Lake for, well, potentially between 2 and 4 weeks with a medial strain. And as he said in that game, that's the second time we've lost a big dog, a key defender, and it's probably cost him 2 games so far this year. Now, we know James Frawley's maybe 3 weeks away with a pec injury. He's actually come to heel quite quickly, and, of course, Spanger out for potentially another 3 weeks with a hamstring. So Clarkson's going to have to bring in Schoenmakers, who plays again today, and, of course, handed over or gave up a chance to go to Adelaide. But you know, Clarkson knows that the whips are cracking, that there are a pack of sides that are already 4-0. So that would have been his mind frame. Paul Pawoplo as well come off with a cork calf from last week's incident with the umpire. So everything at the moment sort of going wrong for Alistair Clarkson. And clearly that was something that was exacerbating the incident that we'll see so many times over the next couple of days.
They're coming through off the SMS, and I'm going to just bring the video footage up now so I can better comment on it. But not a Hawthorn fan, but he was set up, and that's a disgrace. Very sympathetic to Clarko, and hope he doesn't get treated too harshly, Michael and Oakley. And that's really echoing the sentiments that I immediately come to mind off your words. It is, you stick your fingers through the fence of, you know, if there's a wire fence and a dog the other side of the fence, and you stick the fingers through the fence and you egg that dog on long enough and your fingers get bit, don't blame the dog. Now, of course, people need to know better, and I'm sure if Alistair had his time again, he wouldn't punch the bloke in the face, but by crikey, somebody should. Let's talk injuries and the utterly luckless Nathan Drummond. Talk about... If there is such a thing as the footy gods, then they were in a very mischievous mood on Friday night.
Oh, they certainly were. Look, I asked Dan Richardson, the Richmond football manager, about it, and he said, look, the knee is gone, the ACL has been ruptured. I said, what a cruel game. He said, you could not be more right. He will miss the season, but the issue also will be some potential medial damage and also the cartilage. And look, that means that he's no chance to come back, or a little chance to come back really quickly, as Matt Scharenberg has with that 8-month rehab. It just means that it puts him back in a pre-season as well. Of course, he'll miss this season. Now, they also have issues with Ben Griffiths. Now, he's tweaked a calf. So, look, Vickery kicked 3 or 4 in the VFL. He hasn't played in the AFL since that Dean Cox incident of around 20 last year. So, look, at least they have reinforcements. They've got about 15 injuries, as Damien Hardwick did say. So, we're not sure whether Chaplin comes back. But, yeah, certainly some issues for Richmond right now.
Ben Griffiths would be another major loss structurally for the Tigers. They have Tyrone Vickery, of course, ready to take his place. But Ben Griffiths was just seemingly coming into his own after what has been 4 or 5 years of sitting on the tarmac. It's ill timing again for the Tigers.
Oh, it is. It's almost like putting the jigsaw pieces together. We know that he's a great mark. We know that he's a very beautiful long kick. And again, on Friday night, it probably really hurt them in that game when he missed a couple of shots. But you felt like everything was about to come together. And instead, well, you know, he'd be out for a couple of weeks. Now, Sean Hampson too. Now, I think he had 69 hit-outs in the VFL, but he doesn't really seem the man to come in. You think that Tyrone definitely does. So, it's hard. Damien Hardwick said on Friday night, we're not going to blame injuries. We're not going to use excuses. And then 10 minutes later, he said, look, we have got 15 on our injury list. So, the likes of Chaplin, the likes of Chris Newman, all those players are out at the moment. But you think that the assembled 22 should have got the job done anyway on Friday night.
You know, when you look at the fixture and you ask yourself whether or not a side, this is at the start of the season, has been given a good run or a hard run, you try and make your best guesses. And, of course, you don't know how it's going to play out. But one thing that you can't factor in is how often you play a side on the rebound or a side under the microscope. And St Kilda's getting it every week. Round 2, they got Gold Coast, who didn't respond. Round 3, they faced Collingwood, who had just had that loss to Adelaide and were desperate to make amends. Round 4, Carlton under the spotlight with Nick Malthouse facing a week from hell if they didn't win. And I've got a feeling they've got Essendon at the very worst time on the back of a disappointing loss to Collingwood, and they're probably not going to have two of their most experienced players to call on.
No, that's right. And Essendon will be close to full strength and probably go off like a two-bob watch. Alan Richardson, well, let's say that both of Lee Montagna and Nick Rewalt won't play. He said, look, they're less chance than more unlikely. So effectively, we put a line through both of those players. And when you're a young team that's got some form fluctuations, you just need your best players out there. I don't think anyone is criticising Patton McCartan at all at the moment, given that 5-possession game he was subbed off. He's just not ready. But Essendon Honey has the really, really one injury from a disappointing performance. Paul Chapman got a corked knee. Now, he was subbed off. He did seem to be moving okay. So he'd be very likely to come up after an 8-day break. But yeah, when you've got your two stars off the paddock, it's tough. Montagna shouldn't have played in round 1, and it's such a tough decision because he wanted to play for his grieving mate Nick Rewalt, but it's set him back, well, at least 4 weeks now, and you just need your best players out there.
Melbourne pay a price for their very good win on Friday night, and it's a big price because Dean Kent is a heck of a footballer, but they're going to be without him for a while.
Yeah, they will. Potentially 4 to 6 weeks, too. He did that left hamstring, and he knew it as soon as he fell to the ground as he was involved in a tackle. Like, some people might not know Dean Kemp, but he's had a super preseason. He's been one of their best small forwards. And, look, he's really hard to match up on. He's very versatile. So he will be out next week, as maybe will Dom Tyson. Now, Tyson was pushed forward in the second half. of course, they were down a rotation, and he seems to have tweaked his knee. And so there's just a couple of little niggling injuries for Melbourne, who, look, are playing such great football, but you need your small forwards and you need your star midfielder in Dom Tyson, and he'll be a 50-50 chance for the week.
That's good news if Dom Tyson does get up. Hopefully he will. Hasn't he been at last? You know, last it looks like Melbourne are pulling all the right reins, and it all might have changed when they swapped that Josh Kelly pick for Dom Tyson and what turned out to be Christian Salem. Tom Hawkins, we know that there's been the very sad loss of his mother that he's had to contend with, and family comes first, and certainly to lose your mum is a pain and a burden that nobody would begrudge Tom Hawkins to take time off from the game. But I think he wants to play, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Well, what a horrific week in so many ways for Tom Hawkins. But if there was one tiny glimmer of, I don't know, a silver lining, gets back with his family and friends, he sends off his mother after what was a pretty sudden battle with cancer. But he trained with his mates from the Finley Footy Club. He had 20 representatives from Geelong and Gillon McLaughlin, the AFL chief executive, up there for the funeral on Wednesday. Now, we got back and had a light run yesterday. And look, Chris Scott said on Thursday he's in such great shape, his back's fine, everything's great. We haven't really trained much this week anyway, so he's a certainty to play. And look, we just wish him well in a really tough time. And Jack Zeeble too. Look, you know, I think we all ruled him out earlier in the week after a couple of days in hospital with a bruised lung. But Brad Scott says he's ready to go. He's pulled up prime from a training session himself. So, a couple of good stories in their own right. We're glad that these guys are both playing today in a big game at Timmins Stadium.
Jack Zeeble, gee, big difference between a bruised lung and a punctured lung. So he would have been on the sidelines for a while, but he looks like he's right to go. That's good news.
Yeah, exactly. And Tom Rockliffe, apparently he's expected to play, of course, up against West Coast. Now, earlier in the week, they said there's no chance he plays. He's just running around and we'll get him right for the Q clash. But, yeah, he's done a 12-kilometre training session on the weekend, plays with a guard. He might even miss, I think it's next week, because he can't fly. But amazing to think you get back from a punctured lung within 2 weeks. What a ripper story that is for a real tough nut.
And what's amazing is that the Q clash next week could, if West Coast Eagles win today, and plenty of people think that they will win today, can you imagine after four rounds, especially because Gold Coast were thought to be certainties for the eight by some, and Brisbane real improvers, imagine if West Coast win this week, John, next week's Q clash will be between the competition's only two teams yet to win a game.
Amazing, isn't it? Look, I know a lot of people, Ryan Connolly, who we all respect his football opinion, he thought that Brisbane were going to be one of the swoopers of the year, and a lot of people agree with him. He's going to be a heck of, well, maybe he won't be with Alistair Clarkson's situation, but there'll be a heck of a lot of scrutiny on the Gold Coast and Rodney Eade and whether they've pulled the right rein there, and on Nick Malcheski, who had a really poor game. And of course, we all understand Brisbane's lot. They're not getting a lot of players back from injury, but yeah, the Queensland sides, well, they're in dire straits right now.
Q clash will be the spew clash for the team that doesn't win. They'll spew up.
Great. It's just a quick one, Ralph. A great point about Malcheski and how people leaving clubs when they're part of the fabric but also got a great fabric around them, and then they have to go. And basically Malcheski had a role there for 10 years. He was a very good player but offered great protection by the Sydney system, Richards, Grundy, Shaw alongside him. These sort of players, and all of a sudden you go to a side that A is not as good, but you have to be the commanding defender. It's actually a pretty good story to look at. You know, he's obviously gone for superannuation, hasn't he? At the end of his career, he's got a 3-year deal and he's being exposed, clearly being exposed. Yeah.
And we all understand him through skill errors. I mean, that side that ran around yesterday, it was like a Sunday picnic compared to the intensity of the two games that followed. But he didn't go back hard enough with the flight. Yes, you can make skill errors, but he needs to be marshalling the troops in.
Never had to do all that, though. With the greatest respect to what has been a great career overcoming injury, but he's never had to do that, has he?
But he did want to do that. He was told, look, come up and be a leader at this club. As you say, you're spot on. He was able to play his role at Sydney. He said, I want to go and redefine myself as a leader. Mm. That surely isn't happening at the moment. And look, you'd say that they might drop him as a call to arms. But then again, they probably need his rebound with Harbaugh injured himself. So it's a big week at the selection table for Rocket Eade.
Yeah, what looked like a plum appointment for Rocket is turning out to be quite the challenge. I'm sure he's the man for the job. Plenty of experience there, Rocket, and getting teams going from near bottom of the ladder is something he's not alien to. Thank you so much, John.
Well done, John.
And, of course, that John Ralph there from the Herald Sun. And we continue to follow and will throughout the afternoon the story re-Alistair Clarkson. I've just had a look at the footage, Shorey. Whilst it doesn't actually have footage of the actual blow, it certainly has footage of the fan right up in Clarko's face and working to camera. I mean, this is maybe the modern world we live in, with every phone, every mobile device, a camera, a recorder of footage. But that doesn't excuse people from the restraints that are placed on all of us, the common bounds of decency that affords people some respect. This was so utterly disrespectful, and we can all talk about one punch and the dangers of it, and it is very, very real. But we also need to know about putting ourselves in danger and behaving in unsociable manners and what risks they present. And for this supporter, if he's a Port supporter or just a troublemaker, you deserve something. And it wasn't a punch in the face, but I reckon you deserve something. And hopefully we don't see the likes of you at the footy again, you dickhead. A break, and when we come back, gee, there were some good games yesterday. It was catch me if you can, said Freo and Port, and two good teams almost did. Let's start off with Port Adelaide and Hawthorn. It was the tortoise and the hare, and the tortoise almost got ye old hare, but didn't quite get there.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football, full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555.
Now, I can say just off the SMS here, enormous reaction to the breaking story, Alistair Clarkson striking, punching a Port Adelaide or alleged Port Adelaide supporter after the game on the way back to the hotel outside of the confines of the ground, it appears. We, though, on Inside Football, contend ourselves with matters football, but at 12 o'clock, straight onto it, will be Andrew Marr. He's going to be here in the studio. Of course, we've got the call team ready up there at the Gabba. Rowan Connolly will join in the discussion, and you'll have every chance to ring in and opine. And just going by the SMS, this one is absolutely polarising, from basically good on your Clarko to totally unacceptable Clarko and not much common ground. We'll make fascinating listening on 1116 SEN after midday. No Ben Dixon this morning from Crown Bet, but the odds for today's games, Brisbane $2.75, West Coast $1.47, the Lions at 14+. I like Brisbane at those odds. Geelong $2.30, North Melbourne $1.64, the line at 7.5.
Down there, Mark?
Down at Simmons. Yeah, interesting story, interesting.
I think we'll take Brisbane and Geelong at this stage.
Western Bulldogs $3.85, Adelaide $1.27, the line 25.5, and I will plough into Adelaide at $1.27 if I was a wealthy man, but given that I've got a dollar on me, I don't think I need the 27 cents. So, time to have a look at what a game it was. I might have got my Freos and Ports confused there a little bit before the break. I'm not sure if I did, because they were such similar games. Could you blame me? Freo, Port, Sydney, Hawthorn. It was all a mix of grand finalists on the chase. And let's start off with Port Adelaide and Hawthorn.
Inside Football, Port Adelaide.
We've got the power to win, power to rule. Come on, Port Adelaide.
Hawthorn.
We're a happy team at Port.
It was a great first half, as you said, and a brave way at the end just to hang on somehow. I mean, look, we acknowledge we'll run to the pump big time in 40-something entries in the second half. But sometimes you just have to find a way, you know, and we've had a really solid start to the season. And we found a way tonight, and that's what I'm most proud of.
Yeah, they had a bit of luck, to be fair to say. They were kicking goals from everywhere. It didn't matter what angle or what distance or whatever, and
Sometimes you just got to wait for the tide to turn, because the luck can't play out that way for four quarters all to one side. And we worked hard to get ourselves back into the game. And in actual fact, as it's turned out in the last three quarters, had we been able to capitalise on some of our play, we could have nearly pinched it. But you know, given a team a 50-point head start, is hard work.
So there you have the two coaches, Ken Hinckley and Alistair Clarkson. Immediately after the game, this was a... First of all, Shorey, you've watched the game closely, so yeah. I'm absolutely going to defer to you. But I will say, just in a bigger picture, at 50 points down, if Port Adelaide could have maintained the rage, then we would have asked, not questions of Hawthorn, but certainly we would have said that Hawthorn would need to respond to this game with some... on the football field, with a marked improvement. But this is the second time that Hawthorn have got pipped. Very different circumstances. But the fact that they surged back in the game with two players, key players, injured, they lose no admirers from the game. It's basically what I'm saying is, Hawthorn, if you loved Hawthorn on Friday night, you should still love them on Sunday morning.
Yeah, I think so. There's no doubt about that. And I'll look at what they did in a moment, Mark. But at one stage there, it was 8-2 to 1-2. Not sure if luck played a big part, although I must admit, Hawthorn supporters, some of their goals, like the goal by Hamish Hartlett, were incredible goals. But luck comes from strange places. And this wasn't a strange place. They got six of those goals from clearances, Mark. They dominated clearances, and they did it without... Gray and Wines. So how did they adjust? They gave it a couple of roles. The obvious role, because he was rested the week before, and this might be turn out to be brilliant coaching with Corns. He held Mitchell to one touch, right? Early doors. So Mitchell was identified by the Port Adelaide people, not Hodge after last week, not Lewis after his outstanding form over the last few years. No, it was Mitchell, and he was fantastic. The other one they did was a bit more attacking, because they tried to expose him, and that was the Polak to Hill duel on the wing. And I thought Polak was instrumental with his run and his dash and his kicking early on in the game. So there were some interesting matchups there. Hartlett and Lewis went head to head. So what they tried to do, I guess, apart from the battle of the stall gift winners in Corns and Mitchell, they tried to put a player on the key players for Hawthorn that would have their capacity to run off, capacity to attack once their team won the ball, Polak and Hartlett being the examples of that. You and I spoke in the break about a different player emerged from Port Adelaide wearing the number 4 jumper. Now, this might say a little bit about Patrick Ryder, that with Lobie out, he assumed the number 1 ruck at Essendon, and he did it very, very well. But he wasn't the same player until he exploded yesterday. He was aggressive, he's strong, he rucked well, he went forward, he kicked very, very important goals. And his combination with Lobie is now going to be significant for the Port Adelaide Football Club going forward, because Ryder was outstanding yesterday.
I've always felt the Paddy Ryder's game has sort of risen and fallen on the importance he holds within the side.
Yes.
I'm not saying he needs his ego stroked, but what he needs is to be given a senior role, a position of seniority. Now, when he shared the ruck with David Hill.
Didn't David Hill go back down one day very early on an Anzac Day?
Anzac Day.
And Paddy was centre half back, I reckon.
His magnificent game where he was denied the Anzac Day medal because a broadcaster at another station couldn't find a vote for him. So he knows who he is, and you should know who he is. But anyhow, that's
anyway.
By the by. The fact is that Paddy Ryder seems to grow with the responsibility of the position on the day, but also his place within the team. And Port Adelaide could end up with a very interesting forward line. because it could be one of the most potent in the competition based on two players that found their best selves when Port Adelaide not only signed them, but when Port Adelaide said to them, you are leaders and on your backs we will win games and maybe a premiership. Jay Schultz was a shadow of the footballer he is today at Richmond, because in the shadow of Matthew Richardson, he couldn't thrive. And Paddy Ryder was just coming into himself at Essendon over the last couple of years. I think James Hurd tapped into something with Paddy Ryder that his previous coaches only used when other players weren't available. Give him the job. I think he's your man, Paddy Ryder. He's going to be hugely influential for the rest of the year.
No doubt about that, Mark. I tell you, they were exhilarating, weren't they, really? Anyone, whether you're Hawthorn or not, they were brilliant with their run. And it was a preordained tactic, like it was against North Melbourne. High tempo, absolute pace, and attack at all cost. Now, is it sustainable over four quarters? It appears not, because of the intensity and the requirements of running. And certainly against an experienced team like Hawthorn. Now, this is what I like, because Hawthorn were calm at quarter time, and, you know, you watch the Channel 7 game, and Cameron Lynn said they're very calm. They're just talking about, okay, let's just get back into it. So let's have a look. When you're 50 points down and you're like Hawthorn, the first thing is, with a team like Hawthorn...
Now, I'm sorry, Ryder did win the Anzac Day medal.
He did win it.
But I'm still pretty sure that somebody didn't give him a vote. And right. It wasn't Rowan Connolly. I know exactly who it was, Rowan. So he won the award, but incredibly there was one of the people who voted didn't give him a vote.
Right.
It was one of the great games of all time.
Anyway, so what they do is because they are who they are, they're Hawthorn, they never stop believing, and the theme would be at the breaks, we can get back into it. But how do they get back into it? The first thing they did, Mark, was quite, not controversial, but they put everyone behind the ball, everyone, because they had no way of controlling Port Adelaide's run. So they said, let's just stop the game. So you stop the game and you try and have a period of time for 10 minutes where you just make it a nil all draw to try and stop the momentum. At one stage in the second quarter, was it? Yeah. With Mitchell with one possession on corns, Hawthorn manufactured 12 inside 50s in a row. So they started, the second part is they started to win the ball. They started to get the ball and get it inside 50. So they achieved.
And who were those architects? It was Mitchell and Lewis.
Right. Well, what happened was they lose Lake, so they have to adjust. And they have to roll, the skipper back. They did put Lewis, Mitchell behind the ball a little bit, so it turned.
They tried McAvoy back. That didn't.
Well, that was one of the interesting things that he's done it twice now, Clarkson, so he obviously has a lot of confidence in him. But given the seriousness of the scoreboard, Roughhead's played a lot of backline footy as a developing young bloke, and I think Gunston's quite happy there. The one-on-one duel between McAvoy and Schultz isolated is not a duel.
No,
when
he turned him, it's not fair to McAvoy, really. He's
no.
not a fullback.
So I thought there might be other. They're starting centre square at the start of half time. He changed it all around. Rioli went in there. Burgoyne went in there. And Lewis was also in there. So he changed his midfield around. He moved Smith, not moved him, he made Smith play a little bit more central and gave him a different type of territory. So instead of being out on the wing, he came into the middle of the ground and became a running link man.
Now, just watching the game,
yeah,
when they're that far down, my thoughts immediately turn to Smith as a player who can bring them back into the game with his long kicking, his threats on goal. Is that a player that should have been given a heavy tag? Just as Goldsack went to Goddard, should somebody not have gone and worn Isaac Smith like ye old glove?
Well, they only used the one, Mark, at 1.5. I spoke about Polak, Hill, Corns and Mitchell worked a treat. And then there was the basic back line matchups, given the fact that Langford went to Boak. So there's probably not enough room there for another sort of tagger.
Well, could Aaron Young or Could he have gone?
Well, he went into the centre square again like he did the week before. He's influential, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He's very, very influential.
Just a question.
So they get back. They get back. They had 78% of territory. 78%. Now, what you do in that circumstance, just quickly, Mark, is you don't try and kick seven in 7 minutes. It's not going to happen. You get two to their one, another two to their one, and you get yourself within range halfway through. So I reckon Port were great, and it was fantastic to watch a team, as experienced as they are, show you how to work back into a game and give yourself a chance from that far back.
Jeez, I wish Homps had an easier name to pronounce. I'd say it more often. He's a gutsy.
Him and O'Shea were fantastic.
He's a gutsy footballer. I'm going to call him Smith. That's Smith. Now, I'll tell you something about Smith. He can play that Smithy. He's a beauty. I like Smith. A break, and when we come back, similar game, different teams, Frio and Sydney.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. Inside Football. Fremantle. The Sydney Swans.
Laidner's there. De Boer grabs it, gets rid of his man. They're out and going. De Boer's up and going. So too Hill. Has a bounce. Closes on 60. Chips over. Pavlik's marks on 50.
Great poise by Hill. Didn't go long. Pav can go the distance here. Easy.
He will.
Bang.
For 55. Bangs it home. Pavlik kicks a goal from outside 50 metres.
I thought Monday and Fife stood up in the last. McFarlane was super all night. I thought Pavlik led really well, and there's some real cameos. But a week's a long time in footy. Some of the other guys that had big games the week before struggled today. So it just shows how hard it is.
And it was, again, Fremantle. This is new. This is something very different. Blitzing their opponents in the early part of the game. Last week it was 11 goals to nil against West Coast. This time 9 goals to 1 against Sydney by half time. And it just shows an offensive edge that might make Fremantle all the more difficult to play and possibly able to take that extra step that they did not take in 2013. Robert, this is not to be confused with putting up the job done sign and preparing for next week against West Coast. Sydney came and came hard. And save for a couple of key moments, a touch, Craig Bird, a desperate shot at goal by him that was touched by Clancy Pearce. Looked like it was a goal, but correctly touched by Clancy Pearce and paid a behind. A missed opportunity here or there, and Frio might have had to respond. And I'm not saying they wouldn't have, with Sydney incredibly having hit the front. For all of that, we once again see that the enormous effort of pulling back a big lead against a good team invariably doesn't win you the game, because when that team has to go themselves, go they can.
Unbelievable statement by Fremantle early on. 9-3 to 1-3, dominant, very similar to the Port Hawthorn game. And then Sydney, great sides respond, because they continue to believe, whereas other sides that haven't experienced success tend to say it's not our day, and they give up a lot easier than these really proud clubs. So Sydney, you had then had 9 scoring shots to 1 on the back of Hanbury's 11, Parker 8 and Jack 7, and they forced their way back into the game. We spoke on the break, Mark, about Ross Lyon. They've certainly made emphatic statements. At the derby last week, they put it to bed very, very swiftly, and West Coast got a lot of junk time goals. This was certainly not junk time goals from Sydney. Mind you, Fremantle had already made a very, very emphatic statement about their performance. But they found themselves under the pump. I just get the feeling sometimes Ross is happy to then, and you've seen him coach a lot, Mark, I just get a gut feeling that, because both games followed, both at Subiaco, Both games followed similar trends, even though the Sydney team is a lot better than the West Coast team. There are periods in the game, no doubt in my mind, that they go into a conservation of energy mode. They take the tempo off the game. They do not continue to attack, and they try and conserve some energy. But in doing that against a side like Sydney, they actually leave the door open. So there is a pattern there to the Fremantle team, and it is starting to be a very, very attacking team. We now have to look at the Crowley situation that is in the hands of the AFL Tribunal. But certainly, given his ultra-defensive and successful role within that team, a role that Ross absolutely loves doing, nail the number one player and do whatever it takes to stop him, that midfield has evolved to another level. It is giving Lachie Neale additional game time. They are putting Hill through the centre more. Clancy Pearce has got himself fitter. De Boer can go on the ball and do a little bit of it. So it is multiple roles now through the midfield. And then you add the absolute cream, which is Fife, Mundy, and, of course, Michael Barlow. It is a multi-dimensional midfield.
It was such a different game. You know, last week, Lachie Neale had 35 touches.
He did.
Kicked goals, had mid-30s in the touches. Barlow could do what he wants.
He's had 5 and 4.
5 and 4.
Who went to him? I'm not sure.
Well,
it sounds like someone's gone to him.
Well, Sydney have had a couple of opportunities here. They've been able to lock down with Nick Smith. So they can use him as a lockdown when Lachie Neale presents forward. But they also, just man on man, were able to completely dull Michael Barlow for much of the game as well.
It's
so you've got to ask
three kicks.
So you've got to ask, where does the drive come from for the Fremantle Dockers? And it comes from a now very consistent Hill, who's become all of a sudden a week in, week out proposition. And that makes them a much more dangerous team, as you say, with the ball in Hill's hands and Daniel Pearce's hands. Not that it was Daniel Pearce yet last night, but those sort of players are normally better than having the ball, having somebody like Crowley out there. Now, a lot has been made of Crowley, but there's another player not playing for them, and he's the lowest possession getter in the AFL. I'm pretty sure that there are a few players who touch the ball less than Zach Dawson. I know Ross Lyon loves Zach Dawson, and he has been a great servant and a wonderful, over two clubs, staunch defender. But it's not just Crowley who's not there. Dawson's not out there as well. And there seems to be more creativity right from the back of the field through the midfield.
No, it's a fair call. It's a fair call.
I'm not saying there's not a spot for Dawson, but I am saying that I haven't seen Fremantle, nor have any of us seen Fremantle, look this impressive since Ross Lyon took over the reins with the simple job, win us our first flag. A break, and when we come back, we'll build up for what will be another big day on SEN, not least because you'll have a chance to talk about Clarko, the fan, and the aftermath.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football, full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555.
That is it for us. A very big preview of football coming up with Rowan Connolly and Andrew Marr. Then we are up to Brisbane for Brisbane v West Coast. On back to Melbourne, Western Bulldogs v Adelaide. And then I will return at 8 o'clock. I'm sure there'll be talk about a certain feisty Hawthorn coach and somebody who stuck his stick into a hornet's nest and got stung. Shorey, one word is Brisbane West Coast.
Brisbane.
North Melbourne Geelong.
Geelong.
Or I should say Geelong North Melbourne in the Battle of the Twins. And Bulldogs Adelaide.
Adelaide.
I'll be back this afternoon. It's another Super Sunday of footy on the very best station for football, 11:16 SEN.